Okay, welcome to the first of a new series. It was a series that I think people were interested in 2 years ago, but I was sort of scared to do it just because it's somewhat colossal and very halach lemaisa, and it comes up every week as opposed to, like, you know, Birchas Hachama, which comes up less often. But I think it's about time we stuffed the plate and we could do it. You know, Bob the Builder. My wife was pushing two kids, you know, the hill on 187th between Broadway on the bottom and Wadsworth on top. So my wife was pushing the double stroller up that hill, which between double stroller and two kids is probably around, I don't know, 90 pounds or so. And she's straining. And then my son sort of called out from the bottom of his, you know, from his perch, "Come on, Ima, you could do it." So we'll try to do the same. Come on. You could do it. So let's start with Hilchos Bishul B'Shabbos. And we're going to talk about, those who are new, we're going to be discussing the sources. We'll start with sources in Chumash. That will just be for a minute or two. And then we'll start with the sources in the Gemaras. We'll talk about how it's brought in the Shulchan Aruch. We'll always try to give practical applications. Hopefully we'll be able to find some kulas, not just chumras, because we all come home happier if we have kulas to tell our roommates and our parents about. But a few minutes of introduction about what Bishul is, and after we discuss what Bishul is, we're going to talk about some foundation points for understanding Bishul over the course of the next certainly few weeks, perhaps longer, and we'll see how things go. We'll certainly take breaks for, you know, Hanukkah, we'll try this month with Hanukkah, and we'll see how things go. But this probably will take us at least till Hanukkah, but we'll switch up within Bishul. There are a lot of different applications. We're not going to be talking about crockpots. That's available on YU Torah. That was last year. Hot plates, we're going to get to, but that's also going to be in about, certainly not this month. Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, that's not going to be tonight. That might be in a week or two. So everything will, you know, be in its appropriate time. Now let's start with an introduction. First of all, what is Bishul? If you had to fill in a one-line answer of what is Bishul, so, and you can't use the word cook, because then that's just a translation. So define the word Bishul. Let's take some guesses. Rivka. Transforming food. Okay, so if you have something like an aerosol can that has liquid in it, and you press the button and the button aerates that liquid and makes it into a whipped cream, that would be Bishul? You transformed food? It is a halakhic issue, but it wouldn't be Bishul. You could have added one word. You could have added with heat. That might have changed things. That is not a bad definition at all, although we're going to have some issues with that, because when you boil water, which is certainly Bishul, are you transforming it? You are transforming it. No, I'm not talking when you make it into a gas. I'm talking when you just take, if you have a closed scientists help me, a closed, not a population, a closed system. Thank you. Engineering, where are we? Bio something? No? Okay. Okay, if you have a closed system where you're not allowed evaporation, so there might be a high pressure that will change the temperatures of boiling point, but the boiling itself, even without boiling, even when you get to Yatzeladis boat, which we're going to talk about in about, I don't know, 10 minutes or so, that already will constitute, even though there's no changing to boiling, will only be at 212. No, there won't be any changes to gas below 212, I hope, I think. Let's assume. Any other definitions of cooking? Jen, bringing food to a temperature. So according to that, if you have a food that's already at a temperature and you just cook it more and maintain that temperature, for example, you have a roast that has reached 375 degrees that was already in the oven. And you, let's say, keep it there, that would be Bishul just for keeping it there. So that wouldn't be Bishul for keeping it there because it's already after 375. So you could put a roast at 375 into the oven because you're not doing Bishul. You're not changing its temperature. It's already at 375. That's obviously not going to be the case, and we're going to see that won't be the case. Okay, I'm going to give you a few other scenarios just to highlight that the answer is not as easy as we thought. Says the Rambam in Hilchos Shabbos, Perek Tes, Halacha Vav. I'm going to translate as I read. Somebody who melts metal Or he warms up, and listen to this, because this really won't be any change. Welcome back. Wow, it's been a long time. Somebody who warms metal until it glows, meaning you take a piece of metal, you hold it in, you put it in some fire, and the metal's not melting. The metal is certainly not changing to a gas. The metal's just getting hot, red hot. That also is considered bishul. So too, somebody who melts wax, who melts other tar and things like that, that also is asa daraisa in terms of bishul. And listen to this. How many of you have gone, what is it called here? Make your own pottery places. There's a name. What's the name of that place? I don't remember what it's called.
Color Me Mine?
I don't know. Whatever it is. I think the last time I was, I think I went in Eretz Yisrael and they had a cute, like, biblical name to it. What? Kad V'chomer. Right. Thank you. Kad V'chomer. That's the last time I was. Okay. So now you know how long I've been married. So at Kad V'chomer, you do your little pottery and then they put it into the kiln, says the Rambam, that too, if you put clay adama in intense heat, just that it's made into cheres, it's made into now, you know, hard pottery, that also is a violation of, again, you're not changing any forms, you're just making something that's softish, hardish. That also, says the Rambam, through heat, of course, that says the Rambam is bishul, and now the Rambam comes with his grand slam line and tells us the rule, klal shel davar. The rule is as follows. What is bishul? Whether somebody softened a hard thing with fire or hardened a soft thing with fire, that is all going to constitute bishul. I'm assuming that he's talking aside from classical cooking. He's saying even things that's not just regular cooking, even other things outside the realm of food, whenever you make something hard into soft, like melting it, or something soft into hard, like firing a piece of pottery in a kiln, that will be asur d'oraisa chayev for chil Shabbos of bishul. What is bishul? If you want to know the truth, bishul might not be the right word, even though that's what we use. Where was bishul in the Mishkan? Anyone who gets this gets an extra dum-dum on their way out. Two. Where was bishul in the Beis HaMikdash? In the Mishkan, right? All the Lamentes Malachos are based upon the fact that they were used in the Mishkan, in the construction, perhaps also the administration, maybe, of the Mishkan. Where was bishul done? What, Mina? Melt the metal. What metal? The Aron. The Aron was made out of gold, and you had to melt the metal. That's interesting. They don't say that. I don't know why. That's a good point. Yeah, I don't know why they don't say that. No one says that. That's a great point, but no one says that. Yeah?
Did they bake the bread?
They break the bread, but that's baking. That's not cooking, isn't it? That's ofa. No? Yeah?
I think you're thinking something that's kind of soft,
making
it kind of hard
with
fire. So.
Yeah, I'm with you. Then we should call it ofa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rishonim say like you. Rishonim said exactly what you said. They said the real malacha, the real av malacha, is not bishul, it's ofa. So why are we calling it bishul? Any other tries for what happened? What? You got it. Very good. Yes, the way they used to make dyes is they crushed whatever herbs, not animal dyes, but not synthetic dyes, but vegetable dyes, and they would boil the fabrics in the dye, in the indigo, in the whatever other color, the scarlet, whatever the colors they were trying to get for the construction of the Mishkan, for the Gadim of the Kohanim, and that was boiling, that was bishul. So here we actually have a machlokas at Rishon, and what you just said, whether the main malacha, the av malacha that we're dealing with for the next few weeks, month or two, is it ofa? Is that the av malacha because they bake bread for the lechem hapanim? Or is it for the bishul of the samimanim, that's the Hebrew word, the dyes, for the fabrics? That is talking about what is bishul, where it comes from. Now we're ready to start Hilchos Bishul. Any questions about what we just discussed? Okay. Yeah.
Are there any specific implications for whether it is an official or?
That's an excellent question. No, the reason why there won't be any difference is because deciding what the av malacha is somewhat of an exercise in theory, not an application. Because whether or not something's the av malacha, one of the 39, that just is for us to be able to figure out which category to put it in. Everything that's a tolda, that's a subset, subcategory of those av malachas, are still asa daraisa. So even if the thing that was in the Mishkan was baking, but Bishul would still be a tolda and asur daraisa because of the av malacha of baking. For example, borer. Borer is asur daraisa. Where was borer in the Mishkan? There's no borer in the Mishkan. There's something else called dash. Dash is winnowing. Dash is you take your kernel, you take your wheat, you bang it, you want to separate the chaff in the air from the kernels that are harder. You sort of throw it into the wind with a pick, a 3-pronged pitchfork. Thank you, that's the word, pitchfork. And all the chaff blows away, and you separate the garbage from the kernels which fall down to the floor right where you want them. That's separating the good from the bad. That's not borer, that's dash. That's the av malacha. That's what happened in the Mishkan. The tolda of that, which is also asur daraisa, is borer. But so practically there won't be a difference. Excellent point. So let's start with defining an often misunderstood phrase, what is Yad Tzolah Dispo? Yad Tzolah Dispo, let me share with you the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Mem. So comes Rabbi Yehuda and says the name is Shmuel, and says if you heat, whether oil or water, whatever it is, to get to Yad Tzolah Dispo, that amount of heating is asur. If you just warm it up a little bit, that's mutter. Asks the Gemara, what is Yad Tzolah Dispo? So let's pause for a minute. Yad, your hand, so laid. What does that word so laid mean? What's a good translation for the word so laid? You're only familiar with the word from Yad Tzolah Dispo, so it's sort of not a fair question. The best word that I found in the English books, yeah, you have one?
Recoil.
That's fabulous, yeah. Yes, that's what I was about to say. The best word that I found in the English books is recoil. Yes, thank you. Recoil. But I want to share with you a Rashi on that Gemara. Rashi doesn't say that it's so hot that when the hot water touched your hand, oh my gosh, that hurts, you pull back. That's how I would have read the Gemara. Rashi says, listen carefully, your hand recoils, listen to the next three words, mida'aga shelo tikaveh, out of fear that you not get burnt. Rashi doesn't say you pull your hand back because you're getting burned right now. You're pulling your hand back, your hand is recoiling out of fear that it doesn't get burnt. Meaning, what that Rashi did is it sort of lowered the temperature. Let's say I'm going to pull my hand out at 160. Let's assume. But when I feel something that's already in the realm of, 140, 150, I'm already going to pull my hand out so I don't get to be burnt. Do you hear that, Rebecca? Is that clear now? Excellent. We're going to get to that. We have some research from the American Burn Society that will come in a few minutes. Thank you. That'll be in about 4 or 5 minutes. So the Gemara continues. So if we have that one point in Rashi, where Rashi says that it's not that your hand is being burnt right now, but that you're going to withdraw your hand for fear that it might get burnt, which is a little bit cooler. Continues the Gemara. So what is this Yad Tzolah Dispo? Asks the Gemara. Here, the Gemara concludes, any heat that kreisel shel tinok, the belly of a baby, will be burnt. Do we have any nurses tonight? They're all on duty. It is a hard market right now, and our heart goes out for all those who are looking for jobs, especially in the nursing field. So kreisel shel tinok, that was actually confirmed with the American Burn Society, which I looked up online a little bit today, that baby skin, I don't know why, you can explain to us why, but baby skin, you don't know why. Okay, baby skin is forever more sensitive, as we all know, to burns, and you have to be more careful when you bathe a baby, as all the websites about burns will tell you. So we see from the conclusion of the Gemara that even though the Gemara said, Yad Tzolah Dispo, your hand will recoil, the Gemara clarifies itself and says that it's really the belly of a baby. So, Mr. Gemara, make up your mind. Is it Yad Tzolah Dispo? Or is it Kreisel Shel Tinok Tzolah Dispo? The belly of a baby is going to recoil. Which one is it? So Rashi sort of sticks in a few words and helps us understand. Rashi says, really, the heat that we're dealing with that's problematic is that your hand will recoil. It's too hot. Pull back. The problem is, what's hot, too hot for me, I was too hot for you, and what's too hot for you, what's too hot for you is very different. So how do we figure out what the the person who has the highest threshold of heat, the person who has the lowest threshold of heat, the average person over, you know, we'll take a sample of 100 people, and the average, the mean, the median, however you want to figure out, that will be defined as Yatzla Dispo. Oh, that's what the Gemara is going to answer. How do you figure out what kind of person is going to be the Yad? Whose Yad? Is that Yad which is Solid Bo for which we have to be worried about Bishul on Shabbos? Oh, so the Gemara is going to tell you with something a little bit more objective. A baby's belly. That's a much more objective and lower number in terms of the level of heat that we have to be concerned about. So, does that mean that, I guess, I know there are laws against this, but does that mean that if we have volunteers and we actually do some tests on babies' bellies, we should be able to ascertain? Or better yet, if we do a test of all the people in this room, how hot the water has to be for their hands to recoil? And let's take the lowest of all of us. Whoever has the lowest threshold for heat will follow you. That's how Rashi explained the Gemara, that the belly of the baby is just to get you to sort of be worried about even the lower people, the people on the lower end of the threshold. So let's do an experiment. Can we do that experiment? They're just following the hands. If they'll recoil, again, the lower end of the threshold spectrum. So here we find the Gemara. We find the Machlokas and the Achron, and whether or not you could actually do experiments or not. We're not going to get into whether or not we have the right to do experimentation or not. But I'm going to tell you through the postgim how we get to the numbers that we get at when you open up your Hebrew, your English Bishul books. I'll show you how we get to those numbers. One thing that's just a good idea to keep in mind, I think it's actually an interesting number. It's not a number. The Kaf HaChayim, that's the Chida, gives a very clear definition that we could all identify with very easily without having to have a thermometer. Kaf HaChayim says that anything that's too hot to drink, that's definitely Yatzla Dispo. That's clear. I think everybody would agree to that. The next line, he says, is a little bit more significant for us. If he says that it's not hot enough that anybody would refrain from drinking, there are a few negatives there. If something is hot, but no one would stop from drinking it because it's too hot for them, that, says the Kaf HaChayim, is not going to be Yatzla Dispo. So if you know that there's somebody who would not drink this tea because it's Yatzla Dispo, you have to be worried that it's Yatzla Dispo. But if you know everybody would be able to drink this tea, even though it's pretty hot, you know that that's not Yatzla Dispo. We'll see some common temperatures so we could get... Rabbi Ribiat, do everyone know about the picture book? It's a big seller at the Sfarim sale. I guess that's I wonder what that says about our generation. I think it was one of the biggest sellers at the Sfarim sale this past year. The picture book, I also bought it, so we're all in good company. No one doesn't like good picture books. So he actually has a list of common temperatures just so we could familiarize ourselves with some of these temperatures. And then we'll get to some more common poskim and how they got those numbers. So, a lukewarm bath. Who would venture to guess? How warm is a lukewarm bath? 80. Keep in mind, your body is 98.6 if you're normal or healthy. Within a range of a little bit. Okay, a lukewarm bath apparently is somewhere between 90 and 100 degrees. What's a hot bath? If you asked me, I would have probably told you 130, 140. I was wrong. A hot bath is 104, 105 degrees. So that difference of 5 degrees is the difference between a regular lukewarm bath and a hot bath. Normal bath is 101, hot bath 104, 105. Hot coffee, with a little bit of milk, but it's still considered hot coffee, that's 125. And tea that, you make tea and the second you made it and it's like you could just barely take that tiny little sip right as you made the tea, that's about 165. That everybody's going to hold, of course, will be Yatzla Dispo. Now let's get to to some of the online research that I did. When you take a bath, you should take a bath that's slightly warmer than your body temperature. That's what the health section in the British Telegraph writes, based on some chairman of the Hydrotherapy Association of Chartered Physiotherapists. if you go in water that's 102 degrees, which is just 3 degrees more than yourself, 4 degrees more than yourself, your heart rate increases 12%, which will cause you a problem if you have a heart condition, which is incredible. Just those few degrees warmer than your own body temperature. And that, in my mind, very low temperature, 102 degrees, will bring all the blood to the surface of the skin, making it red. Interesting, that's why your skin gets red, because the blood is pulled to the surface. Rina, I guess that's obvious to you, but... Okay, so now I looked at another website, which was the Burn Foundation website, and they gave a few numbers. We know the different degrees of scalding of burns. There's a first degree burn, which is redness, mild. It's not, you don't have to go to the hospital. There's a second degree burn, which is a pimple, a blister, which you probably don't really have to go to the hospital for, do you? You should. If it opens, it could cause infection, but right now you don't have to. And a third degree is charred skin. That's, you have to go to the hospital. And it gave some numbers of how a person could get, God forbid, a third degree burn. And listen to something that's going to be very interesting, which is going to relate to what somebody, and maybe you, Rina, somebody around here said. Your finger in 156 degree water, which is less than that hot tea we were talking about, so unless a second is a long time. For 1 second, that could potentially cause a third degree burn. If you stay in the water, and you'll see where we're going, if you stay in the water for 2 seconds, a person could get a third degree burn at 149. For 5 seconds, a person could get a third degree burn at 140. In 15 seconds, staying in that water, which is fascinating, at 133 degrees, 133 degrees is not, doesn't sound like a lot to me. And if a person is in water for 120 degrees, which again, is not very hot, for 5 minutes, they could also get a third degree burn. So you see something very interesting. You see something that, you see that the longer that you're there, the more of an impact the heat will have on the skin. That's not going to have any application to what we're learning, but I thought that was very interesting. So now we're getting a flavor for numbers. Basically, we're 98.6, baths, hot tea. Let's get to numbers. Ramosha Feinstein, and this is what most American poskim follow, says that once something is 110 degrees, again, that's a few degrees hotter than a hot bath, but it's less hot than a coffee. That's already, 110 degrees is what we have to be worried about. It might be Yatzla this way. So if I have something that I want to heat up, I'm not going to be able to put it in a scenario, and we'll talk about how, you know, put it near the radiator, put it close to the fire. Of course, you can't put anything on a fire, even if it will never reach Yatzla this way. That's an important halacha. You can never place something on a fire, even if it will never get, for whatever reason, Yatzla this way. But let's say you put it nearby, you put it on a radio, you put it in some other scenario near a heat source, that will go up to 100, 102, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, you're fine. Says Rav Moshe, once it will potentially reach 110, you can't do that. Let me tell you where some of these numbers come from. Apparently there is a Baal Halachos Gedolos, that's one of the Rishonim, who says that the milk, when a cow is milked, that's definitely not considered hot. So let's go to the dairy. I will milk the cows, and we'll take the temperature of that milk immediately upon exit of the udder, and we'll see how hot it is. And people did that, and that's about 40 Celsius, which is about 102 degrees. That's being more Mach, 102, 103 probably. That's being more Mach than Rav Moshe. That's pretty cool. I don't mean cool and says, wow, that's cool. I mean, cool, that's not so hot. Rav Shlomo Zalman is a little bit more makel than Rav Moshe. He says until 115 degrees, you don't have to be worried. 115 or 13? 100, I don't remember if it's 113 or 115. He says, listen to this Gemara. And what he does with the Gemara is very cute. The Gemara says, and if anybody gets gored out, you know, gored out, just shut your ears for 20 seconds and then, you know, I'll give you a thumbs up and you could listen again. Let's say a person shechts and they have a knife. We know that in order for something to become treif, it could only become treif, it could only swallow, transfer flavor if there's heat. So let's say you have a treif shechita knife and you cut the neck of the animal, the bird, the kosher animal, the kosher bird. Will the tarfus, the not kosher flavor in that treif knife, transmit from the knife into the bird. So the Gemara in Chulin says that there's not enough heat in the neck of the bird as it's being shechted to be hot enough to take the tarfus, the not kosherness flavor, the not kosher flavor from the knife and let it go into the bird or the animal. Now, they did some measurements again, and ducks, which are kosher birds, yonahs, which is, you know, last week's parasha, and they're kosher birds, and they're brought as korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, all kosher birds, they have a body temperature of about a little higher than human temperature, about 40, 42 Celsius, which is about 100, 102. And then, when the Gemara also says, even if it's a sick bird, when a bird has a fever, well, when we get fevers, our temperature goes up, certainly 4 degrees Fahrenheit, so we're up to about 106. And apparently, you have to ask the scientists about that, but at the moment of shechita, for some reason, the blood jumps up another 2.5 degrees. If we add all this together, a duck who's sick and is getting shechted, you end up with about 113 to 115 degrees. And that, halacha says, that's not considered hot. So as long as you're under that point, you're safe. If you're at that point, you're safe. Anything above that, we really don't know. We're not really not sure whether or not it's considered yatzla disposed. So therefore, according to that logic that I just laid out for you, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach's opinion, and this is how Rav Shmuel Shabbos Kilchasa does rule, anything up till 115 degrees, 113 or 15, I don't remember, but 45 Celsius, I think it's 113 or 15, you're safe. Rav Moshe is a little bit more machri, says only up to 100 degrees. Now, when we talk about how hot Yatzla Vispo is, and I tell you who's being more machri, who's being more mekel, you have to keep one thing in mind. We're not going to talk about it now, but sometimes, depends on which, defining something as being more mekel or more machmir is a question of perspective. For example, let's say something is cold, and I want to heat it up. So if I tell you, you could heat it up to 115, that's being more mekel than someone says, no, you can only heat it up to 100 or 110. But if I'm coming from the opposite direction, meaning, let's say something is, if I tell you that something that was hot before Shabbos reached the Yatzla Disbo before Shabbos, how does it go? You're coming from top down. How those numbers work. Something was cooked before Shabbos. If it dips below Yatzla Disbo, then you cannot warm it up. Okay, I'm confused with how the numbers work, but there is a range. When we say these lower end numbers of 110, 113, 115, that's the lowest possible number that Yatzla Disbo is. But we're not really sure between 113, 110, 113, and 160. 160, more than 160 is definitely too hot, that's definitely Yatzla Disbo. Below 110 is too cool, is definitely not Yatzla Disbo. In the middle, we're uncertain. Okay, so that's just, and therefore, different ways will be mekel, different ways will be machmir, depending on what the halachas that we're going to apply it for. That is the end of the discussion about Yatzla Disbo. Any questions about Yatzla Disbo before we give one important application? I'm talking about liquids. Thank you very much. Yes, everything that we talked about Yatzla Disbo, in terms of what is bishul for food is different than bishul for liquids. Bishul for liquids is what we've been discussing until now, which is taking it from a lower temperature to a higher temperature, nothing more. As opposed to by foods, where it's changing from not cooked to being cooked a certain amount, how much cooked, that we'll discuss either at the end of today or next time. Thank you. 160 degrees, 160. That's, if it's more than 160, then we know it's definitely Yatzla Disbo. If it's below 110, then we know it's definitely not Yatzla Disbo. In between, we're uncertain. Where does the 160 come from? I didn't see inside where specific that number is. That might have just been, like, we know that that's hot enough that if everybody's going to recoil at that temperature, then we have a clear indication just from the simple reading of the Gemara. But I didn't see anything other than that.
Would you say it was definitely not 110 or below
110 is definitely not Yatzla Dispa. Right. Where is it important to get to these numbers? I don't know if anyone was here Friday night at Davening? Other than you. Okay. So other than you, I could repeat myself. But I said Friday night at Davening, I mentioned this halacha that we're about to say, because it was Shabbos, and I was preparing for Bishul, and it was raining, and everyone had wet clothing, and it was raining all day on Friday. You want to dry your clothing on the radiator. You don't want to dry your clothing in the oven. You don't want to dry your clothing on the stovetop. You want to dry it on the radiator. Well, you live in Washington Heights. Washington Heights radiators are very, very hot. Well above 110 degrees. And I'll prove it to you. Put your hand on it and see how many seconds you could keep it there. I tell your roommate who you don't like to do it. So, you know, you just want to check. Yeah, it's leather, so, you know, you learn everyone who's speaking about it. And she'll be in for a pleasant or unpleasant surprise. You have those vertical pipes. I have it in my bathroom. I don't know if they're just in bathrooms or other rooms. You have the vertical pipes that carry the steam up from the basement till the top floor. Put your hand on that and grip it for as long as you can. You'll find that your hands will hurt. Okay? They are very, very hot. They are clearly at Saladispo. But I just came home on a Shabbos afternoon, or it's Friday night, and my clothes are drenched, and I wanted to wear this outfit tomorrow. Oh my gosh, it's the end of the world. So what can I do? I could just put it on the radiator, hang it on. In my house, I have the bathroom door has a hook on the back of it. So if you conveniently hang something on that hook, or on a hanger on that hook, and close the door, it closes right over that steam pipe. So I have a clothing dryer, you know, for free and for perfect for Shabbos use in my house. Well, that's going to depend on this discussion that we just said. Heating something, heating a liquid, more than Yatzla Dispo constitutes Bishul Midaraisa. Therefore, if I put my wet clothing on top of the radiator on Shabbos, well, how hot does the radiator have to be? Let me rephrase that. How hot does the water saturating my clothing have to be able to get such that I can or cannot place my clothing atop this radiator? If my clothing will not get more than, if the water in my clothing will not get to 109 degrees, and we see that's not a lot at all. It's just like a warm bath, a hot bath. If it won't get there, you could put your clothes to dry in the radiator. If the water in your clothing will get more than 110 degrees, 115 is according to Shlomo Zalman, then that might be an issur d'oraisa of Bishul. If it got to 160, then it would be certainly an Issur D'oraisa Vada, Issur D'oraisa Bishul. So this is a very practical application, especially for us who have hot radiators and hot steam pipes in the Heights, of this discussion of where is the cutoff point for Yatzla Dispo. Yes?
Does a radiator not count as a direct fire?
Excellent question. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam she'hakol nehiyah bedvaro. Excellent question. The Gemara has a distinction. We're not going to talk about it now between something being a direct fire or something being an indirect fire. I think we are machmir. If it's going to get Yatzla Dispo, then we're machmir even if it's an indirect fire. So even if it would be an indirect fire, it would still be told us ha'esh is still ke'esh.
But if it is a direct fire, then you can't put it on at all, even if it's...
Right, but I'm thinking it would be a direct fire. It's not a fire. It's the heat, the steam that's being heated, or even in the radiator, I think they have oil, hot oil, that's traveling through the coils. That's why it gets so hot. Oil, I think, gets hotter than water when it's heated up. And that's what travels through the coils inside the radiator to keep it hot. Questions about radiators? We're good? Okay. So we finished talking about Yatzla Dispo. We finished talking about liquids. Now we're going to add one important point in our introduction to Bishul. Let's say you have a food that could be eaten raw and you cook it. Did you do anything? You did something, but did you do anything significant or meaningful in a halachic way? You had a banana. So if you go to a Chinese restaurant, they'll charge you $7 to fry it for you. Took all away. It's not going to be the same again. Okay, so if you eat a raw banana, they taste fine, and that costs you about 45, 50 cents. So let's assume that means it got better. Okay, so let's assume a fruit got better. Let's say, what's a fruit that doesn't get better when you cook it? I like baked apples, so don't go on the apple root. What's a fruit? What? Cucumbers? Cooked cucumbers? Well, soup has like squash in it, doesn't it? That's squash. What do you say, Rina? Melon, yeah. I don't have cooked melon.
Watermelon.
Yeah, I never had it. Okay, I never heard of cooked cantaloupe. Was something we could agree on? Okay, I think we'll all agree on cooked cantaloupe. So cooked cantaloupe. So I have cantaloupe, which is raw. And I eat it raw, and we all love raw, fresh, raw cantaloupe. And somebody cooks it. Was that cooking, or was it not cooking? So, of course, it's going to be asur d'rabbanan. It's definitely asur because you're taking a food, and you're adding heat, and you're changing it, however we want to say it. You're making it very hot, or you're changing it. But is that going to be asur d'oraisa? So here, there's an important discussion in the Gemara. How we paskin is less important. The Gemara's question is, is oil ever subject to the issur d'oraisa of bishul? What do you mean? If I boil water, and that it violates an issur d'oraisa, so why should oil be any different? So let's think for a minute. How come water is cold? I like it. I drink it. I boil it up. Everyone agrees that's issur d'oraisa. Oil, why should it not be that way? It's cold, and then you boil it. You boil the liquid. You made it hot more than yatz lezbo. That should be issur d'oraisa. Why would the Gemara have it this guy? Is it yes, bishul? Is it not bishul? Oil, why should oil be any different? The clear, what comes out of this discussion is something that, I mean, I think we all realize that people don't drink oil. The Gemara already assumed that, actually the Gemara, there was an idea of drinking oil, but I guess no one drank hot oil, or warm oil. Hot oil could get pretty hot. So, if you don't drink hot oil, so that must mean that that's something, oil, the reason why somebody would say that oil wouldn't have bishul is because there's no point in heating it up, and it's something that could equally be eaten in its raw, in its cold form. So therefore, even if you heat it up, you're not doing anything at all, as opposed to hot water. Hot water is, you know, it turns into tea, except with or without the tea bag, but it still turns into something that you can make tea with. But oil doesn't really change by heating it up, and it's something that you would eat raw. So from the fact that there's somebody in the Gemara who entertains the possibility that oil would not be subject to bishul, that's because something that could be eaten raw, and you're not helping us by heating it up, will not be considered bishul. So therefore, based on that Gemara, the Rambam paskins, hamevashel davar, somebody who cooks an item, she'ein tzarich bishul klal, that word will be so important, that doesn't need cooking, potter in Hilchos Shabbos always means potter mida araisa, but it's asur mida rabbana. So therefore, if you cook melon on Shabbos, that means on Shabbos, I take a melon, I open it up, I take a pot of, I have a flame ready, we're not talking about lighting fires, I have a flame, I take a pot, I put it on the stove or a pan, I take melon, or let's say I have boiling water, a kettle of boiling water, I take the melon, I put it in the boiling water on Shabbos, with Edim, with warning from the Edim, with a Hasra, nothing happens to me, I don't violate any Issur d'oraisa. That's what the Rambam says. However, there's a big chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah. Big chumrah. I'm sorry, I apologize. The classic understanding, what I just read to you, is that fruits, which don't need to be, again, I'll read the words, something that doesn't need bishul. It sounds like it applies to all things that don't have to be cooked. Bananas don't have to be cooked. Apples don't have to be cooked. Pears, anyone had poached pears? I like poached pears. They don't have to be cooked, though. What else is something that doesn't have to be cooked, but people, we still do cook them?
Carrots
do not have to be cooked, 100%. What? Broccoli doesn't have to be cooked. Cauliflower does not have to be cooked. People do cook it. So if I would read the Rambam simply, I would say that all of those things, what else? Yeah.
Sorry, doesn't water not become necessary?
Yes. That's fabulous. Hold on 30 seconds. We're getting there. That's fabulous. Thank you so much. Thank you. Most of us aren't. That's very smart of you. Baruch Hashem. So, if I would just read the Rambam, it doesn't have to be cooked. You don't violate Issur Shabbos. All these foods don't have to be cooked. And therefore, I should not violate an Issa Daraisa if I cook my make my apples, if I fry my, frying is just boiling in oil, it's boiling cookies, the same thing. If I fry my bananas, if I cook my boil up my broccoli, my cauliflower, my carrots, my peas, comes the Mishnah Berurah with this gigantic chumrah. And he says, no, all those fruits that we just mentioned, it's going to be also Daraisa to cook them. Why? Because even though they don't need to be cooked, they get improved when they are cooked. Where does he get this from? Again, the Rambam says anything that doesn't have to be cooked, there's no Issa Daraisa, because you don't have to cook this. So it's edible raw. You wanted to cook it, that's your problem. But it's edible raw, it's not subject to the Issa of Bishul. And comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, no, I'm going to be machmir, more than the Shulchan Aruch. Comes the Mishnah Berurah and says, no, I'm going to be machmir and tell you that anything that gets improved by cooking, that's already Issa Daraisa. And therefore, baked apples and fried bananas and cooked carrots, broccoli, and cauliflower will be an Issa Daraisa. Where did the Rambam get it from? What's your name? Dina has the answer. Says the Mishnah Berurah on the bottom where he has his notes, the Shar HaTzion. Not the Shar HaTzion. He wasn't a Zionist. Shar HaTzion. Tzion means a marking, Shar HaTzion. Most people have pronounced it incorrectly, is where he gets all of his halachas from. And on that Mishnah Berurah, he says, where do I get this from? I get it from something very obvious and very logical. Dina said that we know that there's something called water. Everyone agrees that boiling water is asa daraisa. But isn't water edible raw? Cold water is edible, meaning just drink cold water, and that's fine. So how could cooking it be asa daraisa? If we learned out, if the Rambam taught us that something that doesn't need to be cooked is your pater, is not a violation of an issa daraisa. From this proof of water, as Dina pointed out, says the Shar HaTzion on the Mishnah Berurah, that proves that if something, it must be that water is improved when you boil it. So yes, you could drink it water raw, meaning cold, but when you boil it up, when you boil up that water, it gets better. Now it could be tea, it could be coffee, it could turn into something great. That's going to be asa daraisa. And therefore, all of our apples and our bananas and our carrots and our cauliflower and our broccoli, even though they can be eaten raw, since we cook, if we were to cook them, they are improving just like water, and therefore that's the Mishnah Berurah's source for saying that anything that will be improved will also constitute an Issa Daraisa of cooking. That is the Chumrah of the Mishnah Berurah, but again, this is somewhat of a theoretical point, because whether it's Issa Daraisa or it's Issa Darabanan, we're not allowed to cook anything, something that will improve, will not improve. So this is more of a theoretical thought. Yeah, Ali, did you have a question? It takes out the impurities. You're saying it also improves the water in a different way. Yeah, that's true. Even below boiling point? Could be only at boiling point.
And then according to that, what if cooking something to make it more well done makes it better?
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Let's say you have something that's already Yatzlos, but you want to get it to boiling, or you have something that's Mevushal Machavent Jusel, you want to get to the Mevushal Kalsarka, that's going to be later. Good question. Okay. Okay, a few more minutes. Okay, we tried to define cooking. I don't know if we came out with a perfect definition, but when I say the word cook, let's talk about boil. It just makes life easier for me for right now. Cooking is, bishul is boiling. How do you say baking? Afia. What's roasting? Tzli. Roasting and afia are identical. That just means dry heat. Tigun, frying, is what? Depends how much oil there is. If it's deep frying, that's just boiling. That's bishul. So tigun is the same as bishul if it's deep fried. If you fry in a Teflon or in a tiny bit of oil, so that's not called frying, that's called dry heat. Even if there's just a tiny bit of liquid, of oil, that's called dry heat, that's called baking. So baking, roasting, barbecuing, and minimal oil frying, that's all in one category. That's called afia, baking, dry heat. And in the separate realm, which is deep frying or boiling in water, that's what we call bishul. Now, I want to talk about the topic of ein bishul achar bishul. Let's say I boiled up some noodles. They're boiled and they're cooked and they're delicious to eat. Let's say I want to cook them again. Will I be changing anything? Will the noodles be getting a new quality now that they're being cooked a second time? No. For that very simple reason, we have the rule, ein bishul achar bishul. It doesn't mean you're not allowed to cook after cooking. It means there is no... Cooking is not happening once it's already been cooked. Once it's cooked, it's... You got all the cookiness out of it. Now it's, as we say in Yiddish, ausgekocht. All, it's already been... Cooking happened. There's nothing more you can do to cook it. It's all finished. So therefore, if I have noodles that I boiled, and I want to put them now into a pot of hot water, I am permitted to do that on Shabbos, as we all know from serving noodles in soup on Friday night. Because if you leave the noodles in the soup while you're boiling it for 2-3 hours, the noodles will disintegrate, and it will just be a big mush, and our guests won't like that. So what do? We boil up noodles separately, and then we boil up soup separately, and then when we're ready to serve it, we take cold noodles from the refrigerator, put it into the hot soup. Let me just clarify two things. First of all, a number of years ago, I was in the Ramada Renaissance in Israel, and I was very excited. I was there for Friday night meal, and they had a menu, and the menu said that the soup was going to be, I don't think I mentioned this, consomme with vermicelli. I'm like, wow, I can't wait for consomme with vermicelli. I mean, soup I've had, but hey, you know, Ramada for Friday night dinner, that's going to have consomme with vermicelli. And I found out that consomme means chicken broth, vermicelli means thin noodles. So I had my chicken soup and noodles. And I assume that's how they did their consomme with vermicelli. That's how they put their vermicelli in the consomme. Clarify one point. You can never, ever, ever put something on a fire. Or if there's something on a fire, you can never, ever put something in it. Once something's on the fire, it's off limits. So therefore, if you have your vermicelli or your noodles in our language, and you want, they're already cooked, fully 100% cooked, and you want to cook it again, you're not allowed to put it on the fire. That's also drabbanan, just because we don't want you to putting things on the fire, it's dangerous. Or not just it's dangerous that you'll come to do, it's nirekim evashel, Chazal say. Nirekim evashel, it looks like you're cooking because you're putting something that was not a fire on a fire, even though it was already cooked. You know, and I know that it was cooked. No, I see something putting something from the fridge into a pot on the fire, nirekim evashel, don't do that. However, I take my soup pot off the fire, I put it on the counter, and I have a kli rishon. We're not going to talk about it now, but we all know that a kli rishon is mevashel 100%. It's toldos ha'esh. Jesse pointed out earlier, it's toldos ha'esh. And a kli rishon, a pot that was cooking, that was sitting on the fire and cooking food, cooks, midaraisa. So if I would put something raw into that boiling hot pot, which actually takes 4 hours to cool off, I know that because you want to take a soup pot. You want to take a full pot of soup that was just boiled up and put it in the fridge. I know in our house we sometimes have to wait 4 hours, 3-4 hours till it cools off. So there's a lot of heat in there. Definitely enough heat to cook something. So I want to take those noodles. Once it's off the fire, I can take the cooked noodles out of the refrigerator, put them into the pot that is no longer on the flame because ein bishul achar bishul. Similarly, kneidlach matzo balls. Same thing. You boil them up. You put them in a little, you know, Tupperware, put them in the fridge. When you're ready to have your kneidlach and your chicken soup, you take your pot off the flame. The kneidlach have been boiled. Ein bishul achar bishul. Once it was cooked, you're not going to do anything more by boiling it up again. So you put it in this pot that's off the flame. That is mutter, and that is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, Simen Shin Yud Ches, 318. That's where all of Hilchos Bishul are, or at least a good part. Sif Tesvav says something that is cooked, and then he adds an important word. That's dry. We're only talking about dry foods. We're not going to talk about liquids that have been cooked, and I want to reheat them. That's going to be definitely not tonight. We're talking about dry foods like noodles, like a knedel. That's not a liquid that got cold that I now want to reheat. That's going to be more complicated, but something that's a solid food that I want to put into hot water, that's going to be okay. However, let's pause for a moment. How cooked do those kneidlach have to be in order for me to be able, and we're probably going to finish with this, maybe one more point. How cooked do those kneidlach have to be able to put them now into my pot of soup? Of course, if they're fully cooked kneidlach, fully cooked kneidlach, so they're all fully cooked. They're already fully cooked. So by me putting it into a pot of soup, nothing additional will happen. That's definitely mutter. Everyone will agree that that is mutter. Let's say my kneidlach are half cooked. Because sometimes you don't want to cook, if you know that you're going to be sort of warming something up later or cooking it a little bit more later, you don't always want to cook it fully initially, because then it doesn't have that like fresh cooked, you know, flavor that things have right when you first bake it, first cook it. So let's say I half cook my matzo balls. Am I now allowed to put it in the? They have reached, let's say, half cooking. What's half cooking in halacha? Ma'achal ben drusai, which we'll define in a moment. They reached ma'achal ben drusai, half cooked. Now I want to put it into this pot of soup. Is that going to be okay? The pot of soup is going to finish the process. So here the Shulchan Aruch said, no. The Shulchan Aruch I just mentioned to you, 318 Sif Tesvav, 318:15. Says something that was cooked, and he adds two words, kol tzarko, to a complete cooking, a fully cooked item, then you're allowed to put it in. However, if it's not fully cooked, it sounds you're not allowed to put it in, and that's in fact how the Rambam paskins. That only something that was fully cooked, that's what you're allowed to put in to be warmed. There is a different opinion, which we don't paskin, like that of the Rashba. The Rashba says, no, once you have it half cooked, then at least on a Doraisa level, once it's half cooked, you did Bishul to it. Halachically, Bishul is defined by reaching the half cooking mark, reaching Ma'achal Ben Jusai. Once you reach Ma'achal Ben Jusai, halachically it's cooked. So no more can you do. What more are you going to accomplish? It's halachically cooked. You're going to halachically cook it. You're going to do it again? It was already halachically cooked. That's the Rashba's opinion. We don't follow that, but it does shed light upon what is cooking. According to the Rashba, cooking means getting something from 0 to 30. According to the Rambam, cooking is only when it's got from 0 to 60, all the way from not cooked to fully cooked. Then it's fully cooked, you could go ahead and cook it again. According to the Rashba, once it's half cooked, it's already permitted to cook again on a Doraisa level. But halach, Ma'achal Ben Jusai is the minimum cooking Doraisa. Apparently, the Rambam doesn't understand like that. The Rambam understands that something is only considered really cooked. It gets a little bit complicated in the Lamedas. We're not going to get into that. But the Rambam seems to understand something that taking something that is only Ma'achal Ben Jusai will still be an is. There still will be an Issa Doraisa to cook something that is a Ma'achal Ben Jusai. Something is already Ma'achal Ben Jusai, and I cook it to reach fully cooked, that'll be also Doraisa according to the Rambam and how we pass it. So therefore, make sure your kneidlach are fully cooked before you put it in your pot of soup. Let's just define Ma'achal Ben Jusai, and I think we'll probably end with this. There was this guy whose father's name was Jusai, and he was called? Thank you. Ben Jusai, or we just called the guy of Jusai. There's this guy Jusai, and he was, as many of you know, he was a thief, and he had to eat on the run. So therefore, he found a cow, he killed it, and he ate it. But you don't know, one eats raw meat, it's not good for you, it doesn't taste good. So he would cook it as quickly as he can, just enough that it's just barely edible, eat it quickly, and run before the police would catch him. That's Ma'achal Ben Jusai. What that really means is it's the minimum amount of cooking that makes a food barely edible. Now, this was our switch from liquids, where we talked about cooking being, by liquids we said that cooking means taking something cold and making it yad solid, that's by liquids. Now we're going to talk about solids. Solid cooking for a solid, is taking something that is uncooked and making it ma'achal ben jusai, meaning minimally edible. How much is minimally edible? Here, most poskim, let's back up. There are some poskim who say that a third cooked is ma'achal ben jusai. Now that's significant, because let's say the right thing to do, and I suggest you should all try to do this, is have your chalent get ma'achal ben jusai right before Shabbos.
Which is half.
Which, according to some opinions, is a third, and yeah, I'm going to say in a moment that it's going to be a half. That's the main halacha. So if we want to be machmir for the main shita, which is the proper halacha to do, You should try it. How long does it take to cook a challah officially? Who remembers when we talked about crock pots last year?
6 hours.
Thank you. Yes, that's what the official slow cooker books. I know we do it for like 27 hours, but if you ever look at a slow cooker book, none of the recipes have 27 hours. Believe it or not, hard to imagine. All the slow cooker books, and we do have, my mother-in-law has a slow cooker recipe book, and all of the recipes are between 6 to 8 hours. So let's just pick six. Six could be fully cooked, so it's also a good number because it works with a third and a half. So half of 6 hours is 3 hours. That means I should have my food cooked for 3 hours before Shabbos. That means if Shabbos Shkia is at 6 o'clock, which is around this week, I should put it up at around 3 o'clock, which isn't so easy, especially if you come home from work at 4:30 or 5. So I'll give you a solution. Turn it on high. Because slow cookers, when they say 6 hours, that means 6 hours usually on low. But if you put it on high, then it will cook in only 2 hours. So then half-time cooking would just be 1 hour. Okay, it's put on high until Shabbos if you come home. If you come home before Shabbos and you're putting up the challah close to Shabbos, put it on high until Shabbos comes in. Then when Shabbos comes in, put it on low, and please remember. Because if you don't remember, you're going to come back to me and say, oh, Rabbi Orlin, could I come to your house for Shabbos lunch? Because I was listening to you and I have a burnt challah. And I will tell you that it's happened to me. And there are a few solutions. You could, if you have guests, you could always use... Shvus to shvus b'makom mitzvah, have a guy, lower it. If you don't have a guest, then you could add hot water from an urn to the crock pot after you took the crock pot out, depending on what kind of crock pot you have. But that's going to be a discussion, not for now. That's already a little too advanced for us. So what I'm trying to bring out is the following. There's a machlokas whether or not Macha ben Jusai is 33% cooked or 50% cooked. Where is it significant? In the case I just told you, Shabbos comes in at 6 o'clock. You get home from work at, well, you want to leave yourself enough time to cook for Shabbos. So, if you want to be machmir, you'll give yourself 3 hours to cook the challah. If you want to rely on the other shittas or marmeka, which is not the mainstream halacha, you'll allow yourself at least 2 hours to try to cook your challah. I'm not saying that if you didn't put up your challah well before Shabbos, it's a problem. It just gets more complicated. Then you have to have a blech on your challah, something to line it. If that's an issue, please listen to Crockpots and Wayatara, or ask me, or ask all the people who are here who certainly remember everything that we said. That's the discussion of Ma'achal B'Jusai, and the Shulchan Aruch, actually, the Mishabur, I'm sorry, in Reishon and Gimel, says that you should assume that you should try to do half cook to assume something's Ma'achal B'Jusai, but B'Malkam Hadchak. Like, for example, you just got home from work and Shabbos is in 2 hours, not 3 hours. Yesh lahok, after the yesh lahokel, perhaps you could be makel, but I think, it's a cute story anyway, I think, I don't remember, the Reb Chaim Kanievsky, the great, incredible Talmud Chacham of Bnei Brak, said that whenever the Mishnah Berurah says something, you might be able to rely upon it. Reb Chaim Kanievsky says you could actually, yes, rely upon it. Even though the Mishnah Berurah says, maybe you could rely on it. Reb Chaim Kanievsky says, whenever he says maybe, means you could. That's just a side point. So halacha l'maisa, even though the Rashba says once you k'nei lachar Ma'achal ben Jusai, you're allowed to put it in the hot soup, we're going to be machmir like the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that only once it's fully cooked, once the k'nei lachar fully cooked, are you allowed to put it in the soup. Coming up next week, Be'ezus Hashem, is going to be a very important discussion. We talked for the last 5 to 10 minutes about Yesh Bishol Achar Bishol. What about Yesh Bishol Achar Afia? Is there a concept of cooking or boiling something after something was baked, which is going to apply to, can I put my challah and my matzah chips and in my soup, or can I dunk my donut in my coffee? That's going to be next week. That will be a question of, is there a problem of boiling something, of vishal, doing vishal to something on an item that was not boiled previously, but something that was baked with dry heat previously? That will be next week, as a session. Thank you. If anyone has questions, you're welcome to come up and we can see what we can do.